He's celebrating because he knows how important this is.
A great main event.
Only two turns to go. Headed to the checkered flag
to win the showdown. The best of the East.
The best of the West.
Tonight,
the best of them all.
RJ Hampshire.
Jim Lawrence back on top, winning in Nashville.
Yeah.
And he's pumped.
Oh, yeah. SMX Insider is here with your preview of Monster Energy AMA Supercross from Philadelphia, part of the SMX World Championship. We're the Jasons, Wygant and Thomas. Look, JT, you rode for some crazy teams back in the day. You're a longtime privateer. But have you ever gone through a set of whoops without a functioning rear shock?
I think some of the setups I had felt like it, but in actuality, no. But this was a great experiment if you're ever wondering what it would look like. Unfortunately, Ken Roczen was our guinea pig for that long unanswered question.
Yeah, and unfortunately, now we know he's going to be out for a long time. Thought he might have escaped, just banged up, but he did post on Tuesday evening that he is out for the foreseeable future. Might not need surgery, but some broken bones there in his leg. So that's a real bummer to lose Kenny from the series. And Nashville reminds us again, JT, just like it did last year, anything can happen. We can talk a lot about Jet Lawrence going back to a 5-point lead in this championship. We don't have to look any further than Roczen or Pro Circuit in the 250 showdown to know it ain't over.
Yeah, it's every time we think we have things figured out and we're going to make it all the way through this series relatively unscathed, well, it's been 2 years in a row that Nashville proved us wrong. So we've got a lot to sort through, a lot of unanswered questions going into this next round in Philadelphia, injury-wise, championship-wise. Anything goes, apparently, in Monster Energy Supercross.
Yeah, that's definitely been the theme the last few years, and especially this year. As for this episode, our theme, well, we'll unpack everything crazy that happened at Nashville. We'll try to figure out if Cooper Webb can return fire and get some points back on Jet Lawrence this weekend, and what is left of these 250 title fights from RJ Hampshire and now Tom Vielle taking control of 250 West and East. There's so much to talk about. We need another analyst. So let's bring in the analyst for our Spanish language broadcast, who will be speaking to us in English, Tommy Rios. Big interview time. Let's bring in another one of our SMX insiders. We have Tommy Rios, who is part of our Spanish broadcast team, which is new this year. We've checked in with you guys a few times. It's really fun to hear you and Edgar and the call, which it sounds exciting. That's about the only...
Y aquí nos dice Ricky Carmichael, ¿cómo Cooper Webb nunca comete muchos errores? Un veterano y los otros pilotos están con la garra
señores,
para
señores, ya estamos listos, preparados, acelerando. Y ya estamos en carrera, la gran final de la 450, doblando la primera curva. ¿Y quién va a tomar la punta de esta carrera, señor Tommy Ríos?
Te dejo el honor a ti, Edgar. ¿Quién va primero?
¡Eli Thomas! ¡Vámonos, Eli! ¡A correr, se ha dicho!
We've served up some exciting racing for you guys, so it's kind of the perfect recipe.
It couldn't be any better, honestly. Edgar always likes to make the joke that this happened because of the Spanish broadcast. Maybe a correlation sure. Does equal causation there. But yeah, it's been awesome. We kept getting better. You know, we're adding in our own segments. And I think the importance of the broadcast cannot be underestimated. We're getting to new audiences, as we've mentioned many times before. So many Hispanic countries out there that are such huge fans of racing, of motorsport, and now they can hear it in their own language. In a personal standpoint, I have family in Mexico, extended family in Peru, that can now really understand the sport, really understand what the riders are doing, understand the format, the league, the Super Motocross League. And I know so many riders that I've talked to, Guillem Ferrez, Anthony Rodriguez, Lorenzo Locurcio, they're like, this is rad because my family have always been watching me and they didn't understand what was going on. So now they're watching you. So it's been really, really rad. And I also think that this can really help expand and bring more South American, Hispanic countries, these riders to come race in the U.S. And I think it'd be a great opportunity to, you know, maybe in a few years we'll be seeing some more Hispanic champions.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you as a former racer, I have to ask you how you've seen or what do you think about this 450 Supercross Championship? Because it really, to me, felt like Jet Lawrence was about to run away with this thing. You know, we reported it that way, and it just felt like he had kind of grabbed this series and had a chokehold on it and was about to end it. And then, wait, 21 points lead, gone, erased. Cooper Webb is right back in this thing. We went into last weekend with four races to go, everything at stake. And then it felt like maybe Jet was trying to go back down that path again. So how have you found that? And also, I want a little insight as to you working with your partner, Edgar, trying to explain to him the intricacies of a championship like this as well.
Well, it's just so rad about this sport, right? And as a fan, primarily, as I've always been, it's so cool to see the ups and downs and like how quickly things can change. And we saw it, right? We thought Jet was going to run away with it. And all of a sudden, Cooper Webb's back in it. And even though, right, Jet won last weekend, Coop's still in it by all means. Anything can happen. You know, a crash, a fifth, you know, that means Cooper Webb's still in the lead of the championship. So explain it to Edgar. Edgar is like, no way, this is crazy, right? It's like Supercross. I like to explain it to him. It's like, you know, 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter of the NFL almost every weekend, especially how it's been this year. So yeah, it's been really fun to watch. And as a racer, it really, I think, comes down to the mental side. Jet Lawrence has been the fastest all year, right? But the mistakes have kept him back. The rush to passes, little mistakes like the ones we saw in Dallas. So I think that now it comes to the mental side. Who can execute the most? Who can get the best starts? We know Cooper Webb can do that. Now, can Jet do that to tag along with his speed? If he can, he'll be hard to beat.
So let's switch to the 250s a little bit. And I know you've been around Chase Sexton, that program a bit. And also Levi Kitchen was for the first time this year. And we really saw improvement. The question is, how did he get there? What's different this year in his program, in his riding than has been there before?
I think it comes down to experience, right? And you can, it sounds, you know, obvious, but it really does come down to, okay, I can do this, which we knew he could do from pretty much his rookie year, to being able to do it repetitively. And now that, you know, he was able to choose his program, he went to PC, he's been pretty outspoken about the fact that, hey, I wanted to choose my own program. He invested in himself, right? He's got his own trainer, his own mechanic. All of these things means that, you know, he's gaining confidence. He's working on the things that he wanted to work on. And as he's also gaining that experience and that confidence of running up front, it's all snowballing. And I think what we saw starting in Seattle was huge from him. You can tell that not only is his confidence high, but also his abilities are really up there. I think he hit a whole nother level in terms of his speed after that break going into Seattle, right? And you add this speed with the confidence, it's a hard guy to beat. Now, right, things happen in the sport. We've talked about it. Look at what happened in that showdown. Now he's back in this back foot. How can he do with that pressure? I have a lot of experience with Levi, being his teammate for a couple years as an amateur, and he's always been pretty good under pressure. He's always been a rider that will execute, and especially when his confidence is high. So as long as I think his belief is up, I think, and with his starts, right? We know RJ's really, really fast as well, and they're pretty close. So I think whoever has the most confidence and whoever can execute those starts, I think will ultimately end up taking that 250 West championship.
You mentioned the mental side. Jet Lawrence, his riding technique and his speed, I think that's put some riders on the back foot. How do you know that you're as good as you can be and you don't start changing things that actually make you worse? Because I think that's something they're all struggling with right now.
Well, I think JT can attest to this as well. If you try to change things in a moment, you know, they're not always going to work out. And that's kind of like what Levi was trying to do with his change, right? You know, you have to put time into those things that you need to work on. And it's not going to be that quick where you can just pick up on things that Jet is doing because maybe your bike setup or the way that you're used to riding is tailored to the way you've always ridden. So yeah, it's going to take time for them to adapt. At this point of the championship, I don't know how much of their at least riding style that they can change. It's going to be more so, you know, how can they tailor their bike to their strengths and to their abilities. And as for Eli Tomac, we're coming into a lot of dry races. We're coming into a lot of dirt that he notoriously does really good in. Obviously Philadelphia, we're not too sure what's there, but Denver and Salt Lake City definitely play into his strengths. So I think that'll be interesting, and I think he's going to lean into that. And as far as Cooper Webb goes, we've seen him improve all week. He's got, or all season, excuse me. And I think he will lean into that. He'll lean into his strengths. He's been in these situations before. He's raced in Denver and Salt Lake City. For him, it's just going to be about executing.
Okay. Hey, you think in the offseason, though, these guys are going to really go to work and study?
I think so. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Okay. So on the fly, we'll see. Play to your strengths. Only 5 points between two riders who are certainly capable of winning it. And you'll be given the call in the Spanish broadcast alongside Edgar. So enjoy the show. Okay. Now, if you want to watch this weekend from Philadelphia, take note of the schedule. Back to a day race schedule. Race Day Live will begin at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Saturday morning, racing at 3 o'clock Eastern Time, and we will have a live show on NBC at that time. And furthermore, 450 heat races are back to being first this weekend. So do not tune in late, because the 450 heats will start right after 3 o'clock Eastern Time, again on NBC, also Peacock, and the SMX Video Pass. By the way, we've never raced in this stadium before. We've had one Supercross way back in Philadelphia, but this is the first in this building. What's it going to look like? Well, here's the Yamaha track map. JT?
Well, we're back to a standard football-type stadium, as this is the home of the Philadelphia Eagles. And two things you're going to notice from that, lots of 180-degree turns, which should set up for some block passing. It gives riders angles to get inside there and make a move. And then the second thing I wanted to note was the start. It's going to be a really, really tight 180. So riders are going to be angling to get to the inside. Think about how Birmingham was, where everybody was fighting to the inside, and we saw crashes where everybody was fighting so hard to get to that inside. So watch for that. It could be the difference between winning and losing here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, let's get some block pass battles in front of that Philadelphia crowd who once threw snowballs at Santa Claus, right? The old stadium used to have a jail for fans that got too crazy. So let's bring the crazy this weekend. But remember, it's a day race, so don't miss it. And in this show, we got lots coming your way, including some great facts from our statistician, Clinton Fowler. So here we go. 30-second board. Let's drop the gate on hot topics in the sport. This one is too hot to touch. Too many guys got hurt in Nashville again. So last year, that race cost us Jason Anderson, Justin Barcia, Cooper Webb. This year, we lost Garrett Marchbanks right off the start in a heat race, and that unfortunately set the dominoes going. Cameron McAdoo hurt in practice. He and Kitchen crashed into each other in the main. Then the Roczen wreck in the whoops we just talked about. Chase Sexton, broken throttle body. I don't know if he went short or long on that jump. It was just Evel Knievel style. Anything that you could ask for in a bad way happened in Nashville.
Yeah, it was a tough weekend as far as the Alpine Stars medical crew goes. They had their hands full. But you wonder if a little bit was the low traction environment. We saw so many mistakes, and mistakes typically lead to bigger crashes involving other people. So if that is the theme, if these really slippery racetracks are going to lead to this, well, look out, because typically Denver and Salt Lake have this same dynamic. So it's hope for the best, but we may not be done with the chaos that ensues in this series.
One rider feeling good, though, Jet Lawrence. Now, JT, you've been told this quite a bit, that when the stakes are high, he rides his best. He kind of lived up to it here.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you're going to make these claims, if you're going to put this on him and say this kid doesn't feel pressure, you know, I've been told specifically when the lights are their brightest, that's when he performs his best, which, great. I'm here for all of that, and I will buy into that. But in these key moments, just like we saw in Nashville, the points are tied. You've given back 21 points to a rider you can't give those points to in Cooper Webb. You've got to show up, you've got to deliver, and he did it. He passed his way into the lead and showed he was the very best rider in Nashville. So it's okay with me. You want to make those claims, you've just got to back him up.
Now, our next topic is Star Yamaha. This is the team that's been battling Jet Lawrence. Supercross, motocross, 250s, 450s, different riders. Whether it's Dylan Ferrandis and Justin Cooper, or now Eli Tomac and Cooper Webb, they're going for it, and they've said all year long their strategy is just try to keep him as close as possible and take advantage if he makes a mistake.
Well, and Eli Tomac, he picked a heck of a time here to put in one of his best rides, because that rider right there, Cooper Webb, needs every single point available, and that cost him a couple of points. You know, I'm sure that fact's not lost on Cooper Webb. You know, I don't think he expects Eli Tomac to move over. But it does introduce an interesting dynamic here where this championship fight is going on that Eli Tomac's not in, yet he's inserting himself into the point scenarios at weekends like Nashville.
Yamaha's doing well in other facets, maybe not the individual rider standings, but in the manufacturer's points. they're still crushing it, pulling further and further away. Honda has leapfrogged Kawasaki. And actually, it took a reminder. Our man Clinton Fowler mentioned this to us, our statistician. Star Racing, normally their 250 dominance is what guides them, but it's actually been a little rough again in the individual series for Star this year.
Yeah, it's I think it's still a really strong showing by the Blue Crew, right? And the points are really tight here, so nothing has been won or lost, but these things matter. You know, these are global brands and just thousands of employees involved in propelling these riders forward. So it's something we don't talk about a lot, but you look at other sports, it is a very, very critical aspect of racing is who is the best manufacturer, and Yamaha is leading that at the moment.
Yeah, and that's, again, taking the best 250 and 450 result each night. That's what totals those points. As for those individual title fights, yeah, now that gap is 5 points between Webb and Jet. Look, anytime I feel like Jet gets on a roll, it just starts looking so obvious that he's the best guy. But we've already been fooled 3 times this year, 4 times this year. You think Cooper Webb's got another one in him?
Well, Cooper's riding, and he would say, the best he's ridden in his entire career, right? So he has that opportunity. I think if he had kind of backed into this thing, if Jet had crashed his way back into the championship fold, that would be a very different scenario. But I think Cooper believes in himself and his ability to go out and win races right now. And make no mistake, to win this title, he's going to have to do exactly that. He will have to win races over the next 3 rounds to become champion. But the good news for Webb is I believe he thinks he can. And how could you argue it with the way he's been riding over the past month or so?
Okay, so still nothing lost. Still plenty of time. 3 races, 5 points. That's not a very large margin. But I want to analyze how these races have been won and lost. And you and I disagree a little bit on this. I feel like all year, the riders were saying, you got to sprint early. Jet's so fast early. I can't let him get out front early. I got to put the pressure on him early. Well, boy, did they do that. Even Webb, his first 2 laps, he stayed with Jet. Roczen was unbelievable early, as he usually is. And Eli Tomac was also unreal early on. So I feel like Jet Lawrence is like, go ahead, guys. Run as fast as you can. I'll just be jogging back here. And once you guys are gassed, I'll just cruise on by. That's the way I saw that race unfolding.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's so much that those guys are getting gassed. You know, I think once Jet gets into a solid position on the first lap, I think he feels comfortable with kind of hanging out back there a little bit and letting the race unfold. And once he finds his rhythm, I think he just has more pace than anybody else. You know, he just is going to wait and not rush anything. Because if you look at the races where he's gotten himself in trouble, it's on the early lap, right? If he crashes, he gets into some sort of altercation, he gets a really bad start where he looks up and he's 12th on the first lap, that's been his problem. If he looks up on the first lap and he's second, third, fourth, he can just kind of let the race play out a bit. And once everybody gets a little bit of a gap and he can race guys one-on-one, I think that's the perfect scenario for him. And he feels very comfortable going heads up against anyone. It's these high traffic scenarios where he's weaving in and out of people. People are taking cheap shots at him, like Jason Anderson, these guys that, let's face it, I think they all want to be where Jet Lawrence is in their careers at the moment, right? He's the new upstart. He's taking all the spotlight, the headlines. So they're going to take their shots when they can. That's the trouble spot. If you let Jet Lawrence be third on the first lap with really no one near him, that is a very, very scary scenario for everyone else, because I think he has the most pace to deploy as the races and as the laps unfold.
Off the sunset is Aaron Plessinger's Supercross season, unfortunately. It was so great early on. Elbow injury is going to knock him out, suffered that at Foxborough. But there was some good news, JT, for Plessinger.
Yeah, he gets a brand new contract. It's interesting to me that it's a one-year deal again, right? So I wonder what, you know, Red Bull KTM's long-term plans are. Are they keeping their options open for riders that may move up? You never know. Are they thinking about Levi Kitchen? Who are they thinking about to where they would only give Aaron Plessinger a one-year deal? It's just an interesting thing. I don't have an answer for it. You know, I haven't drawn any conclusions, but we know in this sport, two-year deals are typically the norm. If you're sure about your guy, it's typically a two-year deal. And this is 2 years in a row where it's been a one-year deal, which just opens the question, what is Red Bull KTM looking at down the road for 2026?
Let's take it into the 250 East-West Showdown. Kitchen was the hottest 250 property coming into this race, I feel. And the key has been his unbelievable starts. It looked like he was going to have one. It went sideways in the heat race. And then lo and behold, pro circuit invents a even more heartbreaking way to lose titles when they crash into each other, McAdoo and Kitchen, in the main.
Yeah, and I feel like this is one of those scenarios where one misstep leads into a cavalcade of more missteps and things happening to you. It doesn't even have to be your fault. But if you get a poor start in the heat, right? He drifted wide in that first corner, opened the door for all those guys inside. That caused problems where he then went, had to go around Josh Parise in that heat. Remember, he went off the track. That set him up for a poor gate pick in the main event, which then put him in a precarious position alongside Cameron McAdoo, who also had a poor gate position in the main event. So all these things really stem from something that happened earlier. And for Levi Kitchen, you have to look at that drifting wide in the first corner of that heat race where it looked like he was dialed in and ready to continue that dominance. Everything else was just a domino falling from there.
And then that leads to a huge change in the 250 West standings. Kitchen had a 15-point lead coming in. I believe if he hole shots that heat, Hampshire did not have a good start. I don't think Hampshire beats him in the heat. Hampshire is still scratching his head. Instead, Hampshire wins the heat and crushes the main. But we have to give RJ his due here, JT. He rode way better at Nashville than he did at St. Louis or Seattle.
Yeah, I always say opportunities are important, but if you don't take advantage of the opportunity, then yeah, it's a wasted chance, right? And RJ knew that. We talked about it all day long, is if the door opens, can you step up in the moment and walk through that door? And I don't think it's a whole lot different than the opportunity Cooper Webb has had, right? He cut the points lead from 21 down to even. And is he going to be able to take advantage of that over the next three rounds? The same situation is here for RJ Hampshire, who will now have the red plate going into Denver.
Wow, that flipped in a hurry. The press conference, Hampshire said, my confidence was drained after Seattle. Well, it's back now. And then 250 East, McAdoo's situation is even worse than Kitchen's. Kitchen's only 2 points behind, as you saw. But look at this. McAdoo back to third in points, 16 points down. Even if he can race Philadelphia, he's not 100%. This goes all the way back to an incident in practice with he and Logan Leitzel. Take me through this, JT. Is this just, oh, this is what McAdoo does. Dumb things happen. He blows titles this way. This was a practice crash. That's what started it.
It's an unfortunate series of events. You know, for Logan Leitzel, I would say you can't drift into the race line when you know that Cameron McAdoo is going outside to roll triple there. That was an elite line that Logan Leitzel was not going to use. So you have to be mindful of where the top guys are going to be going. And then for McAdoo, it's the same thing, right? If you see that guy start to drift, guess what? You have a front and a rear brake. Sometimes you have to use those. And yeah, I don't know that either of them are blameless here, but unfortunately, it really, really affected this East Coast Championship.
And something else on the line for you fans at home, Nashville is our annual Love Moto Stop Cancer event. You saw a ton of custom gear and graphics on the motorcycles. We're auctioning that off, and all that money goes to St. Jude. And JT, you got to visit St. Jude Children's Research Hospital earlier in the week.
Yeah, this was a very moving experience, I think, for everybody involved. And you know, Monster Energy Supercross has been a part of this program for 8 years now. We've raised $1.5 million. But I think until you get to go there and experience all of the great things that are happening and the lives that they are saving, it's really hard to wrap your head around it. So I feel very fortunate to have been a part of that. And yeah, it really made me ask myself the question about what am I doing to help and what more can I do down the line to back this great cause.
So here's how you can contribute. The auction will start this upcoming Monday, the Monday after our race here at Philadelphia. And you can bid on those. And again, 100% of the money raised in this auction goes to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. That is for children that have cancer. There are no bills for the families or for the children that go there. That's amazing. But it only works through the fundraising process, which you can be part of. So go to the website starting Monday, bid on those items. They will be up for grabs between now and the Salt Lake City finale. SMX Facts time. We bring in our staff statistician, the king of the calculator, Clinton Fowler. Look, everyone has been talking starts this year, and now you want to start with some data.
Yeah, Weege, they are getting more and more important. Over the last 3 years, nearly half a position improvement in the start position for the winner. So just shows the importance if you want to go off and win a main event these days. JT, 9 of the 20 race winners this year have come from the first position at the start. Why is it so hard to consistently get a good start?
Well, to your point, a lot of these riders are calling it start cross these days because they have picked up on this trend you're talking about. But I think it's a lot of to do with the great starts behind the gate, right? Because it's not inconsistent starting. The dirt is this, you know, not a factor anymore behind there. So everybody's got their electronics dialed in. They know exactly the same process. So I think everybody's really close, which takes some of the margin of error out of the equation. So you've got a lot of guys all going in there together, and the best starters aren't always the best starters anymore. You just don't have these same trends that we've had going back decades.
I want to throw something at you though, JT. So yeah, it seems like there'll be a trend and then it'll flip this year. We've had a lot of rain. Everybody's noticed this year. The start always gets it the worst because they can't really put a tarp over it because it's too flat. JT, you're down on the track. Do you think the ruts out of the gate might be more inconsistent this year than previous?
They definitely have been at certain rounds. And I've tried to report from some of those situations. Foxborough was that way. Birmingham was definitely that way. And you're just seeing deeper ruts, bigger bumps through the ruts. And riders are not necessarily choosing on position of where they want to be on the start. It's more of the condition of the dirt on the other side of the gate. And that's something that Ricky Carmichael always swore by. It was more condition over position. And if you could get off the grid and accelerate cleanly on the other side of the gate, that was going to give you a much better scenario for a good start than necessarily being in the exact spot you want if that condition of the other on the other side of the gate is not very good.
So Clinton, going through your data, you found basically there's only been one, well, I guess you could classify as come from behind win this year in the 450 class.
Yeah, and we just kind of tough to call it a come from behind. It was Cooper Webb who started from eighth position in the Seattle race. So only one out of the top, outside of the top five. Pretty impressive ride for Webb, obviously, in Seattle. And I'm seeing this more often. You look at last year, Eli Tomac, he averaged 3.7, so fourth place on the start. That was the best in the series. And there was six guys that averaged better than sixth place. But this year, I'm seeing that it's harder to consistently get those starts. So the best is Jet Lawrence, but he's averaging 5.4, nearly two positions worse than what Eli did last year. And there's only half the amount of riders that are sixth or better off the start. So consistency on the start also seems to be really difficult, right? Being able to D up front in that first, second, third position out of the start. So JT, what is it? What makes it so difficult to do consistent? Is it just everybody doing this?
Yeah, I just think everybody's really raised their game. I give a lot of credit to the teams for improving their technology, right? So that's going to bring more consistency to everyone. And those great starters just don't have the prowess over the field that they used to have. So yes, can they still get a good start? Of course. It's just not going to be a given like it would have been in years past because everybody has these same capabilities to get off of that grid and get cleanly across the gate and accelerate together. And then it's just a little bit more of random chance than it used to be.
All right, Clinton, let's get into this race specifically at Nashville. JT and I kind of debated. I'm thinking that Jet's taking a go ahead and run as hard as you want. I'll be back here jogging, and then I'll just go by later. JT thinks he just gets into a rhythm, and once he's in a rhythm, it doesn't matter how fast they can go. He can go faster. Give me some data on lap times, because it was awesome to watch those first couple laps. All four contenders, big names, were really pushing hard. It was cool.
Yeah, I mean, really interesting to see that Eli Tomac came out and set the fastest lap of the entire main event on lap four. He was definitely on it in the beginning of the race. He even said so himself on the podium. And he did so in the long rhythm lane where he was doing the triple-triple out of that section. That clearly had an advantage early, but they ended up going to the same thing. So I would say, if you know, to your point about jogging versus speed, Eli definitely came out, as well as Kenny came out and rode really fast. But it was Jet Lawrence that ultimately had the pace through the middle towards the end of the race, and he did so in the sand section where he had over a quarter of a second advantage. Just impressive. You could watch him going through that sand section lap over lap, JT, and just amazing how well he did there. The interesting part for me is we're seeing this more and more often this year where one guy in one segment just has such an advantage and he uses that to build a gap and to go off and get a victory. What do you see?
Yeah, he was incredible through that sand all day long, and that transferred into the night's racing. And you know, I think part of its technique, the sand was his strength, and he really leaned into that lap after lap, as you mentioned.
As we're talking about this, JT, I want to give a nod to you on the show, though. Yes, Tomac was awesome in some of these sections, but Jet did figure out some of the things they were doing, that triple before the whoops. I think, JT, didn't he also start jumping? Or Clinton, you might remember, did he also start eventually jumping the same way Tomac did, getting over that table and triple-tripling through there?
Yeah, I mean, through that section, what they ended up both going to was a triple-double single to the inside. And actually, that looked to be, as the night progressed on, that looked to be the safer, fast route to get through that section. So they definitely, Jet and Eli, definitely altered their course there in that section.
Yeah, that's something to be said for that, how well he adapts. So we'll find out, I guess, Clinton, what segments will win and lose the race this weekend in Philadelphia. Here, I'm gonna give a hat tip to you. Maybe the reason we haven't seen one segment dominating the race before, because we didn't have you diving into the data like this in the past. So credit to you.
It's possible. I guess so.
Let's wrap this up again. Philadelphia will be a day race. Just want to remind you, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time Saturday. Race Day Live begins on the SMX, Video Pass, and Peacock. And 3 o'clock we'll be racing there and also live on NBC. So a great window into the sport. And it's going to be awesome, JT, because we don't always have the championship this close with 3 rounds to go.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate lately. You think about the tight championships we've had year after year here, and it seems like it's setting up again. Now we just need a little bit of chaos in that 250 East to bring that championship a little closer, and we're going to have a barn burner all the way into Utah.
Yes, and if you want a reminder of why these 3 rounds could flip everything, just look at recent history. Last year, complete chaos in the last 3 rounds, flipped the title. And then you see what happened in Nashville. Ken Roczen's blown shock. And a weirdo crash for Sexton. We are continually reminded to expect the unexpected. So you better tune in this weekend, because you truly don't know what you're going to see.